everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I think one more night of covering up the plants, and that ought to do it at least for 4 or 5 nights.
Yes, but I don't want to rain on your parade or snow on your parade. They're saying we're going to be back around 30 by Tuesday night.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Anyway, even if we could uncover them for a few days, get them some sunshine and some water, that would help. It's the Buckmaster Show. It's Thursday. It's the 26th of January, 2023. The Buckmaster Show in our 13th year now. This month, we entered year number 13, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030. Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We piggyback the live feed from the 24/7 service at kvoi.com. When we do our telephone interviews, of which we will do 2 major interviews today, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Will Humble is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. His 35 years in public health included more than 2 decades at the Arizona Department of Health Services, where he served in various capacities, including the agency director from 2009 to 2015. He is our contributor on public health, one of 2 dozen regular contributors we call upon, and I'm glad we are able to do so. And Will joins us now on the live line. Will, how is the new year treating you so far?
Well, good afternoon, Bill. I'm actually nice. It's nice to have all those holidays behind me. Feels good to get back to sort of normal work weeks.
Yeah, there you go. As you heard on the CBS Network News, at this hour, the FDA is trying to decide on the path forward concerning COVID vaccines, and we're entering year 4, 3 full years now of this pandemic. Good idea to kind of have a yearly, kind of like the flu shot, and maybe even combine COVID vaccines with the flu shots. What's your take?
I don't know that they're going to be able to combine it with the influenza vaccine just because they're very different in terms of their storage and handling. But I do think it makes a lot of sense to have it a seasonal vaccine and in the fall. And as they mentioned in the break, it makes a lot more sense to just reformulate this and just focus on the new booster shot rather than having, you know, right now there's the primary series and then the booster vaccine are different. And it's time to move on and just go with this newest vaccine because, you know, this virus is going to continue to evolve. And if they do go to seasonal, which I expect them to do, then it'd probably be even an updated one from the one we have now next fall.
Is COVID-19 still a public health emergency, or do we need to revise the designation that's been with us for 3 years?
Well, you know, at the state level, it hasn't been considered a public health emergency for a long time now. It's still considered a public health emergency at the federal level. You know, at sort of the instinctive level or like the professional level, I don't think that it should be designated as a public health emergency anymore. I don't know what Health and Human Services, what the reasons are for them to continue the public health emergency. My sense is that it's more administrative than technical because they're probably not ready to, you know, for the disenrollment on Medicaid and those kinds of things. But shorter answer is, in terms of science, I don't think it should be designated a public health emergency anymore.
Over 95% will of the people in this country have either been infected or vaccinated or typically both. Boy, we've come a long way as we look back over these 3 years.
Well, that's right. And we've lost a lot of people and we've learned a lot of things. It's nice to have this in the rearview mirror. It's not gone. I mean, this virus is going to be with us for, you know, forever probably. But in terms of it, you know, causing the kind of disruption and loss of life, you know, at that magnitude, those days are over. Having said that, people are dying from this from infections with this virus every day in Arizona still, just nowhere near what it, you know, has been in those peaks that we had in the winter of 2020 and 2021.
I read, maybe it was in the Wall Street Journal, there was a piece about after the great flu pandemic in 1917, 1920, people wanted to really forget, move on, and the history books didn't even have much about that great pandemic. Do you think this will get a similar treatment by history, COVID-19, or will this be a different story?
That's a really good question. You know, I don't really know. I think for some people, it's already true. I mean, for a lot of people, they've forgotten about it. Some people never bought into it, in the first place. I think for many, probably the majority of people, they've already moved on, I think, and put it in the back of their minds. For those families that lost, loved ones, just like 100 years ago, they're not going to forget it for at least a generation.
Well, let's talk about the new director, director designate, Dr. Teresa Cullen, who is technically, I guess, still the director here at Pima County, in Pima County Health. But she has to be confirmed, doesn't she, by the state legislature. How does that procedure work?
Yeah, so all of the agency directors that are going to be new with this administration need to go through Senate confirmation. If they're a holdover, like the water director, they don't have to go through a Senate confirmation. But Dr. Cullen is new, obviously. And so she has 1 year from the time the governor sends her name to the state Senate for confirmation to get fully confirmed. Now, Governor Hobbs has designated Dr. Cullen as her choice to lead DHS, and I think she's going to start on February 20th. But she still needs to go through Senate confirmation. But she can serve in that capacity for a full year by law. And so she's going to have the rest of this legislative session as an opportunity to get confirmed. And I think that will happen. And then, the beginning of the next legislative session, because the year-long clock doesn't start until the governor sends the name to the Senate.
Is she going to change, do you think, the approach of the office toward childhood vaccinations?
Well, I hope so. one of the big trouble, now I'm not talking about COVID now. I'm talking about all the other childhood vaccines. And during the Ducey administration, well, first of all, let me back up just a second. There's a program that many people have not heard about. It's called Vaccines for Children, and it's been in place for decades in the United States, and it's a federally funded program that's designed to ensure that all kids have access to vaccines regardless of their vaccination status. So totally uninsured kids would be able to get vaccines, even undocumented kids, for example. And then the reason for that is that the virus doesn't care. Somebody's documented, if they're insured, those kids can get infected and spread it to other kids. So it's super important to have everybody, all the kids vaccinated. So the Vaccines for Children program has really been super successful at doing that for many years. But that that program depends on a robust network of doctors participating in the program. Doctor's offices and nurse practitioners and stuff. During the Ducey administration, we went from more than 1,200 practitioners that are participating in the program to less than 600. And, if you talk to those doctors that quit the Vaccines for Children program, they'll tell you that it was over regulation by the state health department. It was the reason that they dropped out of the program. And it was making, and the expenses that they were incurring because of that regulation made them lose money on participating in the program. We expect doctor, and those are decisions made by former Director Crist and Harrington. I expect Dr. Cullen to quickly recognize the scale of that problem and to reverse the policy decisions of the earlier administration so that more providers will be enthusiastic and come back to the Vaccines for Children program, which means we'll have better access points for Arizona's kids.
Which,
and better vaccination rates.
What are the vaccines that are required in the state of Arizona for children to, in school?
Yeah, for school, it's the old mainstays, the MMR, the DPT vaccine. When I was in one of my old jobs, we added varicella, which is the chickenpox vaccine, to the list. We added meningococcal vaccine for the older kids. We added that one back in 2008. So it's not the full list that's required for school, but it's those vaccines that are sort of the core infections that can really wreak havoc and make a lot of kids lose school if you don't have high vaccination rates. So it's not a long list, but it's the A list, I think, of all the vaccines that kids get or are recommended to get. But not every recommended vaccine, you know, on the schedule is required for school.
And of course, the vaccine hesitancy that we saw during the 3 years of the COVID year, pandemic, that might reinforce some parents in deciding they don't want a vaccine to vaccinate their children for anything.
Yeah. So there's two issues. There's number one, which is the lack of access points, the erosion of access points, the erosion of places where kids can get vaccinated. So those are parents that want to get their kids vaccinated, but aren't able to because the number of places they can go to get their kids vaccinated is down. That's an administrative problem we can solve. You know, that's not, you know, PSAs or convincing anybody of anything other than, you know, doctor's offices to come back to the VFC program. The other problem, which you described, happened way before COVID, by the way. We were back when I was in my job during the Brewer administration, we were losing about 0.5% per year on the childhood vaccination rates. And it was predominant when we did U of A did a study for us to figure out why. And it was predominantly, parents choosing not to vaccinate their kids. And 0.5% per year doesn't sound like a lot, but after 10 years, that's 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And 5% is a lot when you need 95% of kids to be fully vaccinated in order to prevent a measles outbreak from cascading in a classroom. So, you know, in many school districts, especially parents who choose to send their kid to charters, we've got vaccination rates that are really wholly insufficient, especially in Yavapai County. You guys down there in Pima are actually, Yuma and Pima counties and Santa Cruz have the highest childhood vaccination rates in the entire state. So you guys are pretty good down there still, but there are places like Yavapai County and Mojave County where the vaccination rates are just really, really bad.
All right, stay with us, Will. We've got segment two with you coming up. Folks would like to join in the conversation, the live line number 790-2040. Right now we're going to talk about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery. They're gearing up for Valentine's Day. Who doesn't like something sweet around Valentine's Day? Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. Check it out on the website. You will see and be very tempted when you see all those beautiful menu items, beautiful color pictures of pretty much everything on the menu. They are open right now for lunch. They open for breakfast 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday. Then Sunday they open at 7, and they are now closed, taking a well-deserved day off on Mondays. All right, the Buckmaster Show continues with former Arizona State Health Director Will Humble after we take a break. We'll be back with Will right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, My air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Bill Buckmaster back with you on the Buckmaster Show. Coming up in about 10 minutes, the new congressman for Southern Arizona, Juan Ciscomani. Congressman Ciscomani, we'll talk about his first month in office back in D.C., and he's been named to a couple of very influential subcommittees. Coming up tomorrow on our Friday Focus interview, Pima County Administrator Jan Lesher and Dan Scheer, the editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahorita Sun, will be with me. But right now, we continue with our contributor on public health, Will Humble, the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association and the former director for the Arizona Health Department. Have the number of cases of flu and that respiratory issue, which we're all kind of commingling with the COVID situation, is that starting to diminish here in Arizona, Will?
Yeah, the infections with all three of those viruses are substantially down from where they were just a few weeks ago. So RSV is that childhood virus that we've talked about last month that was off the charts. I mean, it was the worst year in many, many, many years for this RSV virus, and much higher than any time in my whole career. And that's substantially down, not to zero, but that's pretty much run its course. Same with influenza. It was a pretty substantial peak of influenza infections this year. That is substantially down, and the same goes for COVID. Still, people are getting infected, but all three of those are way down from where they were in November and December.
In previous visits with us, you have talked about the issues, the challenges surrounding the Arizona Psychiatric Hospital. Has there some more oversight going on in that area?
Well, there's some efforts at the close of last legislative session. Senator Bartow, who actually lost her race up here in the Phoenix area, was one of the champions of of boosting the psychiatric hospital system in Arizona. She had a hearing at the very last week of the last legislative session, and there was a joint committee of legislators and other community folks that were really diving into the details of the progress from last legislative session, which actually there was a $25 million appropriation last year to build out some additional new secure psychiatric facilities in Arizona. So, you know, there are psychiatric facilities that are not secure, but that doesn't mean we don't have the capacity. There are some people who benefit from a more secure type of facility, and we just don't have the capacity in Arizona for that right now. So there's an effort by the last legislature that it's a charge of the state Medicaid agency access to build out and build the capacity for those more secure psychiatric facilities. And so we talked about the progress there. They still don't have, you know, an RFP or a, you know, a vendor request out there. Access doesn't yet. So we don't have any real progress on the ground on that regard yet, but Access is doing a good job getting that started. The other part, which we've talked about in the past, is oversight of the state hospital, which is up here in Phoenix. And it's both run by the Arizona Department of Health Services and also regulated by Arizona Department of Health Services. So you don't need to be a rocket scientist to know that this you shouldn't be regulating yourself. I mean, that's the fox watching the hen house, and it results and has resulted over many years in bad outcomes because of the lack of rigorous regulation, because of the fear of, you know, making bad news and, you know, the politics of it and stuff. So I've been advocating for a long time to separate the function and have the state mental hospital be a standalone agency so that the state health department could regulate it without running it. And, you know, we've raised the issue. We raised it. Senator Bartow's been a champion of that. She's no longer in office. I'm hoping that we will see somebody take up her interest in this issue and run a bill to separate that function, because it's just, and it's been this way, by the way, Bill, since 1974.
Really?
Yeah. The state hospital has been run and regulated by DHS since 74. So, and it's not right. It's not right. All your listeners are going to say, no, I know that's not right. You can't regulate yourself. There's no checks and balances in the system. We've got to get this fixed. There's no bill that I've seen yet that would make that change, but I'm hoping that we'll see somebody step up to the plate.
Most people would probably rather not even think about the Arizona State Hospital, and who knows what goes on there. But thinking back, you're saying 1974. Why was there a change made where they suddenly were going to be regulating themselves?
Well, that was when the Arizona Department of Health Services started back in 1974. So it did not exist as an agency until 74. And when they were cobbling together, you know, parts of the agency like vital records, birth and death certificates, the licensing programs that existed around the state, and the mental health system, including the state hospital and the state laboratory, they cobbled all those pieces together and made the state health department. And when they did that, they said they gave both the regulatory function and the operational function to running ASH. ASH is the shorthand for the state hospital to ADHS. And if you can go back into the archives of the Arizona Daily Star, you know, for decades and see problems out there. And if you do a root cause analysis for a lot of it, it goes back to this fact that you've got this institutional problem that needs to get fixed.
What I don't have any idea about their scope of the state hospital. I mean, is it a large facility? What's your overview of that situation?
Yeah, there's about 350 persons. So there's about 110 people who are in the state hospital on a civil commitment. They have a severe psychiatric illness that can really only be treated at the Arizona State Hospital. So Those are civil commitments on that side. We call that the civil unit. Then there's the forensic unit, and there's about 110 people there. Those are people who have been adjudicated as guilty except insane for something. Used to be called not guilty by reason of insanity. And then there's a third, which is the sexually violent predators area, not predators, persons, sexually violent persons unit. And there's about 110 people there. So it's not a huge facility, but the level of intensity of care is substantial, which makes it a really difficult facility to run. Not nearly as hard as Department of Corrections. I'm not saying it's that hard. But because of the intensity of the care that's needed, it is a challenging place to operate and to regulate.
All right. Will Humble, always a pleasure. We really appreciate you joining us every month talking about public health on our program, and hope the new year is off to a good start and continues to do so. Thanks, Will.
All right. Take care. My pleasure.
All right. Coming up next, Congressman Juan Ciscomani on the Buckmaster Show. We'll take the mid-show break. Be back with the United States Representative right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things 3384 East River Road, open daily in their 53rd year. GreenThingsAZ.com is their website. Their sister business is called Zocalo Village, and they import beautiful Talavera directly from Mexico to bring you Tucson's largest collection of sizes, shapes, and styles at great prices. That's at Zocalo Village. So combine the two businesses on their 13-acre site is a destination in itself. Their website, zocalovillage.com. Our lifeline number for our telephone interviews, 790-2040, the lifeline presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And we will open up the lifeline for comments and questions for United States Representative Juan Ciscomani, joining us now from the nation's capital, U.S. Representative for Arizona's 6th Congressional District, newly elected, been in office about a month. Congressman, how is it going?
Hi, Bill. Thank you so much. It's going very well. Happy to be on. I wish I was there in person, but we're up here in D.C. this week in session.
And congratulations. You've got a couple of, I think, pretty heavyweight appointments. You're on appropriations. That's big time. And the Veteran Affairs Subcommittee.
That's right. That's right. Very exciting about both of those for different reasons. I'll start with the Veteran Affairs. I think that one is very, very important to the district. Obviously, we are a preferred location for veterans to move to and live here. Well, there, I'm used to saying here in Tucson, there and both Sierra Vista and in Tucson with the different bases there, but also all across our state and specifically in the district. So we want to make sure we're advocating for our veterans. They represent the best of us. They've made the most sacrifices to protect our freedoms, and we got to make sure that they're well taken care of. The subcommittees in there include economic opportunity, include health, oversight, technology use. I mean, there are so many ways that we can help benefit our veterans, and I'm very excited to go to work on that. And then the second one is appropriations, which I think most people know about how that works. That obviously was a seat also that Jim Colby held for a long time and was able to get some key wins for the state and for the region. So I'm really looking forward to going to work on that as well.
And last week you were here in the district, really your first kind of week in the district since being elected, and you held your first advisory council meeting. What are people talking about you? What do they want to hear from you?
Yeah, that was a very exciting meeting. You're right. We were in the district last week now. And one of the first things that we did when we were sworn in and we were finally in the seat was to announce the advisory council. So one of the first things I wanted to do when back in the district was to have a meeting with the council. For those that don't know, it's a 40-person council in all from Southern Arizona, Central Arizona, and the southeastern corner of the state, where we have people from five counties and different areas of expertise: water, defense, education, you name it, all across the board, job creators. And we sat down, and what the main purpose of this council is for me to have that access to experts in the field that can give you some guidance and advice on moving legislation, also to keep a finger on the pulse of our district and see what's happening and what the priorities are. But the main thing, Bill, here, and I think you'd appreciate this, is something that I don't think it's been done before in terms of the council. I wanted to make sure that it included Republicans, Democrats, independents, a wide variety and diversity of people and backgrounds, because it's important to get that. And people that want to work with people on the other side, whatever the other side is, we needed to make sure that it was someone that people that were willing to listen and work across the aisle just for solutions. It's not political. This is just mainly focusing on results. And it was a very productive meeting in person, and we had some people call in on Zoom as well.
Let's talk about the big issue of the day, the big story of the day, the president yesterday making the announcement that 31 advanced American tanks will be going to Kiev, the military. How is that going to work? I mean, first of all, are you on board with this?
Well, like I said before, I am supportive of the help and the aid that we're sending to the Ukrainian people. This is something that we need to continue to do. With like anything else, we have to also make sure there's accountability in the process. And we should ask questions on that in terms of the resources and how they're being used. I think that's all things that people would common sense support. So right now we need to make sure that we keep supporting them, and we have a level of accountability in the resources that we're sending over.
Well, is this enough, or how do you feel about aid to the war over there, the war effort for Ukraine. When that war, the 1 year anniversary of the war is already here. It's actually in a week or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's one of the issues that we've talked about. What does success look like? There's obviously no timeline in these kind of conflicts in terms of by when the conflict has to be resolved. That's not something that is ideally put in place. What we want to see is what success looks like. And again, the support here to the Ukrainian people as they fight off and stand up to Russia and Vladimir Putin, I think that's been the main focus of this. And there are a lot of questions around the support that I think are fair to ask. And I have them as well. And that's one of the things we're going to be working on this.
And what would some of those,
especially in appropriations? Well, in appropriations, for example, on the foreign aid, in the foreign aid subcommittee, that's where you're gonna see some of the discussions around this really begin to happen. I'm excited to have that first meeting and actually be able to get a briefing and more information on how this is going. I have basic questions that everybody would. Committees haven't met yet, and we're going to start meeting. Well, we'll hopefully find out our subcommittees by the end of this week, I'm hearing. Maybe it takes a little longer. But once we start having these meetings, we'll be able to have the necessary briefings to start asking these questions.
How about this talk again that former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who is out, seems like he's everywhere, talking about his new book, and he's talking about the cartels in Mexico. And this actually came up during the Trump administration, I think it was in 2019, about designating some of the cartels as terrorist organizations and then going after them with even missile attacks. Some of your thoughts about what we should be doing, Congressman, about the cartels?
Well, the cartels are responsible for making our border situation the way that it is right now. And, of course, our weak stance on this, and I say our in means of the federal administration here with the Biden administration, the Mayorkas, that they've completely failed at protecting our border. That is the number one responsibility that our government has, to protect its people. And they haven't done that. And that's a big problem. Whether the cartels are designated or not, it's the responsibility of our government to protect our borders, and they haven't done that. So that's where I would definitely start. One of the things we're working on is adding more resources, and again, going back to the appropriations part of the conversation, to our Border Patrol in terms of technology, more agents, speeding up the process of hiring, especially hiring veterans that could go quicker through the process and be hired for Border Patrol. These are all the things that would have immediate impact on the border situation and in dealing with this whole notion of the security on it, especially regarding around fentanyl. So these are the areas that we can focus on in terms of dealing with that. And this would weaken the cartels. Really, the policies that this administration has implemented, that is the top thing that has empowered the cartels that weren't this powerful just a couple of years ago when their hands in a lot of ways were tied by U.S. border policy that we had.
Anything going to change with U.S. border policy over the next 2 years? I know it was one of your big campaign issues, Juan Ciscomani.
Yeah, we have to. We have to deliver on that. As you know very well, we have a divided government. We have obviously the House under the Republicans and the Senate under the Democrats and the White House Democrat as well. So there's going to be a lot of discussion, a lot of back and forth. And, you know, it'll be tough. It'll be tough, but this is something that we have to continue to prioritize. And some of the things that the House has the power to do, of course, is the power of the purse. I talked about resources and funding that I just listed a few things that we need to be investing in. And then the other thing is also the oversight of the agencies. And this is when the questioning to the secretaries come in, and specifically around what Mayorkas hasn't done. I mean, Bill, I know for a fact that people in Yuma have met with him and he met with them and saw the situation when he was there, promised aid and some changes, and that never came. And that's something that we have to hold him accountable for. And that's something that the House can do as well. So these are all ways that even with a divided government over in the House, we can start to make some changes and move the needle there.
All right. We're speaking with the newly elected and now newly serving Congressman Juan Ciscomani, a Republican representing Arizona's 6th Congressional District. Our conversation with the representative continues after we take a break.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Talk a little bit about Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We send so many of our listeners over to that beautiful area, the southeast portion of the Land of Enchantment. It's only about a three-hour drive to a something different. Just a three-hour drive east of Tucson. You can start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find all sorts of very tempting ideas about recreation and some great places to stay and great places to dine in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line, is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We continue now on the live line with United States Representative Juan Ciscomani, a Republican who previously worked as a senior advisor to former Governor Doug Ducey, while also serving as the vice chair of the Arizona-Mexico Commission. All right, caller, our listener Greg has a question and comment for Congressman Ciscomani. Go ahead, Greg.
Thank you, Bill. Juan, great to hear you on the air. And, you know, Bustos Media, with these local shows, it's becoming a rarity these days. So my hope is that throughout your term, you continue to participate with Bill. And do you know Kathleen Wynn, who is on in the morning at KBOI?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, Kathleen and I got to know each other pretty well during the campaign. And Greg, thank you for saying that. I agree with you. This is, you know, being on with Bill, and I've done other local media as well. That was important. Actually, right off the bat, we did a lot of local media stuff, and we put the national media more on the back burner. I think this is a great way to stay in touch. Even when I'm up here, it's a great way to have these conversations. So thank you for saying that, and you can count on it. Right now on the air, I'm committing to be on with Bill as long as he keeps inviting me.
Okay.
Now, if you would, I know you're probably busy as a freshman congressman, but if you run into Jim Jordan or Jim Comer, tell him as a 70-year-old guy in Tucson who wants to just wish him the best with the road ahead because, you know, the media is already attacking them, and all they want to do is get to the truth about the Biden crime family syndicate. And they're going to take a lot of heat, but listen, they decided to stay in the kitchen. You know what they say, you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. So good luck to you in your term, sir.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much. I'll let him know. I do see Jim around. He's, of course, now leading the Judiciary Committee and very, very involved. I'll make sure I let him know that.
All right. Big issue on January 19th, the United States officially hit its debt ceiling, having spent all of the $31.4 trillion available for expenditures as allocated by the Treasury. So unless Congress acts before the impending June deadline, there could be grave effects. So where are we right now on this, Congressman? Congress seems to remain at this impasse. This is pretty serious stuff.
It is serious stuff. We've seen this situation before, and we have to definitely address it. In terms of a deadline on this, this is something that we're going to continue to have meetings around addressing it. There are meetings that need to happen between the Speaker and the President as well, and both parties here to start negotiating on this. The reality is that we're hitting the ceiling because of reckless spending. And this, I have to say, it's not just on one side or the other, but it really definitely was made worse by the overall spending and out of control spending, like the Inflation Reduction Act that we saw coming from this administration and the last Congress over the past 2 years. This is the type of reckless spending that is just not sustainable, and we need to be making wise choices on our spending behaviors. We have to also fulfill our obligations. And it's not an easy place to come to, but this is why we're here, and it's going to take a lot of back and forth. We reached it, like you said, Bill, and we have to make sure that we fulfill our obligations and also at the same time change our behavior that got the country to where it is right now. And that's one of the reasons that I came here, because the out of control spending has been the way of operating here for a long time, and we absolutely need to shift that. It's just not sustainable, and I'm hoping that being in appropriations is going to help us do that, having my voice there.
One politician has come forward with at least a partial fix, though not all of Congress may agree with him. It's Democratic Senator Joe Manchin. He wants to change the way in which Social Security is funded, notably raising the cap on payroll taxes in order to make the highest earners contribute more on the program's reserves. I think there's a lot of concern. I know here in Southern Arizona, people are worried about that if we don't do something about this debt ceiling, we could have some problems with people getting their monthly Social Security checks. Some of your thoughts.
Well, that's one of my main concerns with is our seniors, those that are in Social Security, Medicare. These are or anyone on them. These are the people that we obviously were thinking of, and we have to make sure that they continue to receive the benefits that they've paid in for. And I am committing to not doing anything that will ever jeopardize them receiving what it's theirs. So this is why this conversation, as you said, is critical. We're in a critical point. And I want to look at whatever piece of legislation is out there. There are a lot of ideas floating around, some good, some not so good. But I want to look at them and always prioritize our ability to fulfill our commitments. And when I say that, it means to those that are on Social Security. And that's the money that they've earned, and it's theirs. And we have to fulfill that obligation.
What was it like those first 3 days where you really weren't a member yet of Congress while we were waiting for after 15 votes for things to be sorted out with the leadership? Some of your thoughts about that, please.
No, man. Yeah, that was an exciting part of all of this. You know, but it was actually a little funny because it was in line with the rest of the experience, Billy. You remember it took a week for our race to be called, and then one county didn't want to certify. And then I get here, and I'm like, okay, I'm finally going to do this. And then we can't get sworn in until the speaker gets elected. I'm like, how many times can we delay this? But it was, you know, I think it was just it's a historic moment, obviously, in so many ways. It took a lot of patience. It took we got to a good place, and I think our country is better for it. People got to see exactly how this happens, and I don't think people would have been watching had it not been that exciting. My family was here, and that made things a lot easier and better for me as well. They were up in the gallery most of the time, broke off for a little bit and went and did some sightseeing when they were here, but they were able to be here for the time that I spoke on the floor when I nominated Kevin McCarthy in the 10th round. And they were also around when we knew that we had the votes that we needed, and we were going to get sworn in that night, which ended up being at about 2:30 in the morning. All six kids were on the floor. They were all awake, and it was an exciting time for the family, for sure. So thank you for asking. That was fun.
And how has the transition? I mean, after all, you moved from Southern Arizona to D.C. Obviously, the family is, I assume, going to keep your home here in Tucson. But what's it like to kind of transition from a point of, you know, where you're living, where you're sleeping every night?
Yeah, no, that's another good question. We haven't, I don't think we've fully adjusted yet just schedule or time zone or what day of the week it is. It was a wild time because they were here most of the time. Then we went back home, and the kids and Laura are in Tucson. They're staying in Tucson, and I go back on the first flight out after votes. I fly out, and I'm in the district as much as we can. This is a pretty heavy schedule, more than apparently from what I've heard from other members that they usually see. It's an off-election schedule as well, so they usually keep you in Washington a little longer when that happens. So I've been having to fly back here almost every week. And for those that care, I sleep in my office. You don't have I don't have the luxury of having a place or if staying at a hotel. I got to send, I make sure that the kids are well fed and they're taken care of at home. So here in D.C., I'm standing in what is now my office and my home when I am here. So
I didn't realize
that's a life.
All right. Yes. Well, we'll look forward to perhaps a Friday. We'll get you in here when are convenient for you to come back and be on the show in person.
We'd love to.
Thank you.
We'd love to, Bill. It's always fun to see you and be in person with you. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you very much. Good luck to you, Congressman Juan Ciscomani, on behalf of the congressman and Tom, engineering, producing the show. It's going to wrap it up for our Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.